the ugly side of the beauty industry.
I was really surprised to discover that I'd been exposed to more than 200 chemicals a day just from the beauty products before I even got on the school bus.
That's Stacey Malkin, and this is Writer's Voice. Welcome to the show. I'm Francesca Rhiannon. Last month, California failed to pass a law that would have banned several known poisons from baby bottles and sippy cups. The most well-known of these was bisphenol A, a chemical that makes plastic hard and has been linked to breast cancer, decreased fertility, and feminization of boys. It went down before an onslaught of opposition led by the chemical companies. But in 2007, California did ban another toxic chemical from going into products used by young children, phthalates, and Congress is considering a similar ban. But even if that goes through, phthalates, along with a toxic stew of other chemicals, will still get into the bodies of babies and children. In a research investigation by the Red Cross, 200 toxic chemicals were found in the bodies of every newborn they studied. How did the chemicals get there? From the bodies of their mothers. And one major source of exposure for those mothers was from beauty products. From lead in lipstick, to phthalates in nail polish, to sodium lauryl sulfate in shampoos, women are getting a hefty dose of toxins every day from the beauty products they use. Products many of them start using in their teens. My guest, Stacey Malkin, was one of those teenage makeup mavens. And when later on she found out what she'd been exposed to, she was outraged. She's communications director of the Campaign for Safe Cosmetics, and her book is Not Just a Pretty Face, The Ugly Side of the Beauty Industry. Stacey Malkin, welcome to Writer's Voice.
Thank you for having me.
You've written the book Not Just a Pretty Face, The Ugly Side of the Beauty Industry.
Yes.
And you were a teenage makeup maven.
I was. I confess in the book that I was addicted to Seventeen magazine, and I spent a lot of time in the Osco drug cosmetics aisle, you know, looking for the products that were going to turn me into the girl I dreamed of, the confident, lovable version of me. So I used lots of products, all sorts of skin creams and face makeup and hair products, all topped off with an enormous cloud of Aquanet Extra Superhold hairspray in the big pink metal can. So I had quite an elaborate routine, and for the book I went back and I actually looked up all of those products I had been using as a teen and found out what kinds of chemicals were in them. I was really surprised to discover that I'd been exposed to more than 200 chemicals a day just from the beauty products before I even got on the school bus.
So these chemicals that you were exposed to individually, they are quite toxic, right?
Some of them are, yes. We know some of them are carcinogens, hormone disruptors. And what the companies will say is they don't disagree that the chemicals are toxic, but they say, well, they're used in only low levels in each product, and that's safe. But when I looked back at my beauty routine, what I found was that I had been exposed to 17 carcinogens, more than 24 hormone-disrupting chemicals, including parabens, which are estrogenic, phthalates, which are linked to early puberty. So when you look at the total exposures to all of these chemicals, and many products have the same kinds of toxic chemicals that are pretty frequently used in beauty products, you know, the exposures are adding up day after day. When we know that products that we put on our bodies do get into our bodies, if you think about like a nicotine patch or a birth control patch, those chemicals absorb directly into the bloodstream, and it's similar with some of the chemicals in personal care products.
You're talking about 270 chemicals, 17 of which were of some real concern for you. And then you're saying that we're putting these together. What happens when we're getting exposed to a whole bunch of different ones? I mean, is the effect just additive, or do they actually interact with each other?
Right. Well, that's a great question. And many times we don't know because chemicals are not studied for their aggregate effects or for their synergistic effects, how they interact with other chemicals. But there are concerns that some chemicals, when they're added together, they have an exponential toxicity. That's the case with some of the studies on phthalates show that if you add a couple of different kinds of phthalates together, then they're much more toxic than either one alone. But, of course, there are no requirements to study this stuff, so there's a lot of unknowns. The companies don't have to safety test products. They don't have to understand the health effects of chemicals that they're putting into personal care products. So there's huge gaps in the data of what we know about the health effects of chemicals. And then for some chemicals, we know a lot, but yet the companies continue to argue it's safe to keep using these toxic chemicals when the evidence really shows otherwise.
Well, one of the things that you really start out talking about some of the reproductive effects. We mentioned phthalates, and that's P-H-T-H-A-L-A-T-E, phthalates. We've been hearing a lot about them. These are these hormone-disrupting chemicals that some people think are leading to, you know, the fact that girls as young as six are coming into puberty. But it's this idea of so many reproductive toxins. You start out with one that's a real shocker, lead in lipstick.
Isn't that a shocker? This is a crazy problem to have, and yet it is a problem. We recently tested lipsticks and found that 61% of them had lead. And the good news was that 39% of them didn't have lead, so we thought, well, that indicates that it's obviously possible to make lead-free lipsticks. That's what all the companies ought to be doing. But so far, the industry's reaction to that is, you know, we can't get lead out of lipstick. Lead is everywhere, so therefore it's okay if it's also in lipstick. Lipstick is a particular product where we wouldn't want to see a known neurotoxin like lead. I mean, we've known for 70 years that lead is highly toxic, especially for developing fetuses and small children. It can interfere with brain development and lead to learning disabilities, behavioral problems, and other things like that. And again, the company said, well, it's just a little bit of lead in the lipstick, which is true. It is just a little bit, but it's a little bit that's adding up, you know, application after application and day after day on top of lead that's already in our bodies, because when lead gets into our bodies, it stays there for a long time. So if you're a teenager, applying lead to your lips every day, that's going to stay with you, and eventually when you want to get pregnant, the levels of lead in your body could be at dangerous levels.
And in fact, you said that in the studies that were done, women of reproductive age, women between the ages of 20 and 40 were, in fact, the most contaminated. Talk about those studies. What did they find?
Yes, well, the Centers for Disease Control has been studying a broad swath of the U.S. population for about 7 years, tracking which chemicals are getting into people and at what levels. They're looking at about, I think at this point, it's about 200 chemicals that are known to be toxic that they're finding in people. And the study that you mentioned, one of their original findings was that women of childbearing age from 20 to 40 had higher levels of phthalates in our bodies. And that's why we originally started looking at cosmetics, which led to the founding of the Campaign for Safe Cosmetics. But we thought, you know, why might women have higher levels in their bodies of this chemical, phthalates, which is used in lots of different products? You'd find it in vinyl plastic, like the stinky vinyl shower curtain or vinyl car seats. But we thought if women are having higher levels, maybe cosmetics is a source, or personal care products, since women tend to use more of those products. Men use them too, but women use about on average twice as many personal care products in a day. So we started to look at labels of all sorts of products, and we didn't find phthalates, that crazy word that you spelled. And it's a chemical for which we've got so much evidence going back 30 years showing that phthalates interfere with the development of the male reproductive tract is the primary health effect that they see. Things like birth defects of the penis, testicular tumors, lowered fertility, and lowered sperm counts.
And even fewer boys being born.
And in some cases, yes, there's evidence of fewer boys being born. We also see in the human population a trend of a decline in male reproductive health. So we're seeing an increase in birth defects of the penis, lowered sperm counts in industrialized countries, increased infertility even among young people. So there's some real signs of concern that something's going on with male reproductive health. And, you know, the chemicals are just used widely all over. So when we finally tested cosmetic products, we sent them to a lab. We found that more than 70% of personal care products had phthalates in them, but it wasn't listed on the label, and that was shampoos, hair gels, deodorant, fragrance, all sorts of products.
And these are also products for kids.
And then, yes, even children's products have phthalates, and that would be include baby shampoo and also children's toys. The U.S. Senate is debating this week about a bill that would ban phthalates from children's toys. You know, and there's surprisingly, there's a lot of resistance to this, even though, and this is the thing that I find really outrageous, Europe banned phthalates from children's toys 11 years ago. So, you know, for a decade, toys in Europe, and they've still got plenty of toys over in Europe. The kids are not, you know, lacking for toys. The toys over there have been phthalate-free. So companies have already figured out how to make phthalate-free toys, but they're still selling the phthalate-saturated stuff in the U.S., you know, in toys that kids suck on, put in their mouths. The chemicals are also used in personal care products. It's just ridiculous.
And this is the stuff that nightmares are made of.
Well, it's surprising. You know, we think the U.S. is ahead on so many things, but what we're finding with chemicals and product safety is that we're way behind most of the rest of the world.
Yeah, and I'm going to be asking you a little bit more about how that situation came about in just a little bit, but I want to just stay for a moment on some of these effects. You talked about the impact on male reproductive health, on baby boys. You know, I think a lot of times people think, oh, well, it's just affecting women or it's just affecting a few people. But you're really pointing out that there are, you can't just affect one part of the population without affecting another.
That's a good point. And I think what we're finding from the science on chemicals is that it really shows us that everything is connected. We all have these chemicals in our bodies, whether we use these products or not. You know, all of us are exposed to chemicals from personal care products that are getting into the waterways, getting into fish, the food supply. It's a ubiquitous contamination. It's also interesting with phthalates. A lot of people have said to me, well, if phthalates affect baby boys or young boys in particular, why do we have to worry about women? And a similar argument about the lead in lipstick. Well, we're mostly worried about children with lead, so why does it matter if it's in lipstick? And I just, that just shows such a disconnect in thinking because, of course, you know, where do children come from or baby boys come from? They come from the bodies of women of childbearing age. And I think we need to be protecting that population primarily as the bottom line of all of our health laws to say it needs this, whatever products that we're selling on the shelves need to be safe for women of childbearing age, women who could be or are pregnant. Because from many of these chemicals, a developing fetus is the most sensitive to health effects.
Yeah, and you talk about a 2004 Red Cross study of newborn babies.
Yes, it was a study with the Environmental Working Group in conjunction with the Red Cross, and they looked at the umbilical cord blood of 10 infants chosen at random in U.S. hospitals, and they found an average of 200 chemicals known to be toxic in every baby. And I think that's when we see that picture that babies are being born pre-polluted before they even come into the world with industrial pollutants, I think it's just time to say, how can we do things differently than we have been? You know, the last place that we should find carcinogens is in baby shampoo. The last place we should find lead is in lipstick. And it just doesn't need to be there. The companies already know how to make products without those chemicals, and that's what they all should be doing.
If you've just joined Writer's Voice, we're talking with Stacey Malkin. She's Communications Director of the Campaign for Safe Cosmetics and the author of Not Just a Pretty Face, The Ugly Side of the Beauty Industry. You know, another group that this surprised me when I read your book, another group that's being disproportionately affected is actually African-American women.
Yes, that's true. Disturbingly, some of the more toxic products that we see are marketed to African-American women. Hair relaxers and hair straighteners would be an example. Very powerful hair conditioners that sometimes have placenta, which is an estrogenic ingredient. And also African-American women tend to use more products overall. So the exposures are even higher for that group, and there's concern about that because some of the health trends that we see with African-American girls, girls are going into puberty even earlier among the African-American population.
How early?
They're seeing breast development as early as 8 among girls. Overall, across the U.S. population, girls are entering puberty earlier than they used to. But that's particularly true of African-American girls. And it's often showing up as breast development that's a lot sooner than it used to be.
And how about breast cancer? I mean, don't African-American women have a higher rate of breast cancer?
Yeah, that is true. Among young African-American women, the rates of breast cancer are higher, and also the death rates from breast cancer are higher. So they're seeing more aggressive types of breast cancer in African-American women. And early puberty is linked to higher risk of breast cancer, and both of them are linked to longer exposures to estrogen. So we're very concerned about chemicals that act like estrogen in the body, like placenta, like parabens, which is very commonly used as a preservative in personal care products, also like phthalates, which studies show are linked to early puberty.
Now, you work as you're the communications director for the Campaign for Safe Cosmetics, is that correct?
Yes, that's right. And we're a national coalition of health and environmental groups that have been working over the past 5 years to research the chemicals in personal care products, to advocate to the companies that they switch to safe alternatives, and also we're working to pass legislation to restrict harmful chemicals.
Now, in the course of your work and in the work of this campaign, you have some really almost hilarious, if they weren't so tragic, stories of the beauty industry and what happened when you tried to confront them. First, why aren't these cosmetics, in fact, regulated? I mean, the Food and Drug Administration is the regulatory agency. They regulate food. Why not what we put on our faces and bodies?
Right. Good question again. Most people are surprised to find out that there are no requirements for companies to safety test chemicals in personal care products, and they're allowed to use nearly any chemical in those products. So there are very few regulations. The FDA has very little authority over the cosmetics industry, and the industry has worked long and hard to keep it that way with very effective lobbying and marketing efforts aimed at keeping the industry unregulated. So it's the least regulated industry at FDA, and it's basically up to the companies to decide for themselves what's safe, which chemicals they want to use, and companies are making decisions all over the board.
All over the board?
Yes. So some companies are making products that are safe enough to eat and really making an effort to get rid of toxins, innovate new alternatives for ways to make products. But what we see, unfortunately, from most of the mainstream companies, all of the most heavily advertised brands, is immense resistance and avoidance, denial, just an unwillingness to even discuss legitimate concerns about toxic chemicals.
And what is their justification? They claim that they can regulate themselves, and they do have some standards. Talk about that.
Well, the companies will say, we test these products, we know they're safe, we've been using these chemicals for decades. But unfortunately, the company's framework of safety is they're mostly looking at short-term health effects. Does a product cause rash? Does it cause you to have anaphylactic shock or something like this? They want to make sure that there are no obvious immediate health effects from product use. And sometimes those things still happen, but for the most part, companies are being careful to screen for that stuff. But what they're not looking for are the long-term health effects. How do the chemicals that we're using, first of all, how are people being exposed in the real world to these chemicals? So, for instance, how many phthalates or how many parabens are in a typical person's daily routine, and what are the health effects of that day after day over the long term? How might that contribute to longer-term health effects like reproductive capacity or cancers?
So what,
which are very difficult to trace for, of course. How can you prove that a chemical being used today contributes to cancer that comes down the line? It's very difficult to make those correlations definitively. Therefore, the companies say often fall back to the excuse, well, you can't prove it, therefore it's perfectly safe.
Yeah, so when you say that you cannot prove it, well, Europe is taking a very different attitude towards this. They have actually quite a different approach. They have banned some of these chemicals in the use of beauty products. What's the difference in the approach?
Well, Europe takes more of a precautionary approach. So what they did was they looked at the chemicals that were known to be carcinogens or reproductive toxins. There's a long list of chemicals that fall into those categories. And they said, you know, we know these chemicals are toxic. Instead of arguing about what levels they're okay to use in products, the companies need to figure out a way to make products without phthalates, without lead, without coal tar. So they passed a cosmetics directive that banned that long list of chemicals from cosmetics starting in 2003.
Yeah. Now, you went to a conference, Health and Beauty in America, in 2006. You went kind of almost undercover.
Yes, that was fun. Undercover, I got to listen for 8 hours while the top beauty companies talked about basically how they were planning to avoid regulations.
But they're very aware of the European approach. I mean, we live in a global market. How can they avoid these regulations and still remain healthy economically?
That's a good question, and I don't know. I think that the industry has so far been extremely myopic. You know, I sat in that meeting, and I was so impressed by the fact that they were openly acknowledging that they are operating in a completely dynamic and changing landscape, that Europe and other countries are changing the rules of the game, that we're learning so much more about the toxicity of chemicals every day, new studies coming out on a daily basis. They were openly talking about how consumers want greener and cleaner products, and that segment of the market is just exploding. And in the midst of all those changes, the industry's plan was, we're going to keep doing things the way that we've been doing them. We just have to be better about marketing ourselves as safe, and we're going to hire a bunch of lobbyists to keep the industry unregulated. So, you know, basically, like, let's march back to the 20th century with trumpets blaring. It's really amazing, and I don't think it's good long-term for the companies. And I think the smart company is going to be the one that breaks away from the pack. So far, none of them have done it. But the one who comes out and says, you know, we're going to be the one that makes a real commitment to public health and women's health, and we're going to stop buying carcinogens from the chemical companies.
And we're talking with Stacey Malkin about her book, Not Just a Pretty Face, The Ugly Side of the Beauty Industry. Stacey Malkin, you've been working for the Campaign for Safe Cosmetics. You guys have a kind of standard that companies can adhere to. Talk about that and talk about the response from companies.
So when we went to the industry and we said, you know, hey, Europe is banning all of these chemicals. Why don't you take them out of products in the U.S. and join with us to come up with plans to shift the industry and shift your company to safer alternatives? So we asked companies to sign a pledge, which is called the Compact for Safe Cosmetics. And we have 1,000 companies now that have signed that pledge, which is just amazing and really encouraging. And we're working with those companies to figure out how to have transparency and accountability within the agreements that they've made. And those will be posted online, so you'll be able to actually look up the company and find out where they are on the spectrum of compliance. So we see many positive changes in the industry. Companies are reformulating safer products, and things are changing pretty quickly. The interesting thing, though, 1,000 companies, not one of those is a mainstream major brand. So, you know, not on the list is L'Oreal, Unilever, Avon, Procter & Gamble, the majority of the market. So that's disturbing. Those companies are, as I said, clinging to the old way and the old polluting technologies that they're used to and that are cheap.
I was quite alarmed in reading your book, and you list a number of websites. In fact, one of them is Skin Deep. You can Google Skin Deep and go to it. And I went to it because I have a 4-year-old granddaughter, and I'm concerned about, you know, you mentioned the shampoos and the bubble baths and the sunscreen. So I went to my local Whole Foods, and I tried to find some of those products. And in fact, even in the companies that I thought were you know, good companies that advertise, you know, healthy baby or whatever it may be. I read the fine print. I read those ingredients, and I found things that you had listed as toxic chemicals, like sodium lauryl sulfate.
Right, and that is true, that some of the natural brands are better than others, and some of them are using the same old cheap petrochemicals. But one of the good things, the positive development that happened this year with Whole Foods, they came out with a new premium body care standard, they call it. Premium body care, it's a little seal on many of the products on the shelves at Whole Foods. And all of those products have to reach a pretty rigorous set of criteria. They can't have synthetic fragrance. They can't have sodium lauryl sulfate or 1,4-dioxane or a whole list of 250 problematic chemicals. So that's a really good, pretty high bar for product safety. And a lot of companies have been reformulating over the past couple of years to meet those standards at Whole Foods. So we do see that kind of progress forward and some tools like that that will make it easier for consumers to make choices when you're, you know, standing at the store looking at the shelves.
You know, that sodium lauryl sulfate said it was derived from coconut oil. So does that make it different than other kinds of sodium lauryl sulfate?
That's a good question, and it's where it gets confusing. Some of those sulfates are toxic, yes, and sodium lauryl sulfate in particular. But then there's another version, sodium laureth sulfate or myreth sulfate, which is often contaminated with carcinogens. You know, one way, you mentioned Skin Deep, that's really an excellent way to start to see what marker chemicals to look for in products and also to check out your own favorite products and see how they rate in terms of toxicity. So you can look that up online. It's at safecosmetics.org, the Skin Deep database.
Well, the book we've been talking about is Not Just a Pretty Face, The Ugly Side of the Beauty Industry, and we've been talking with Stacey Malkin, the author and also communications director for the Campaign for Safe Cosmetics. Thanks so much, Stacey, for talking with us.
Thank you very much. And if we could mention our website again, it's at safecosmetics.org, where you can find the Skin Deep database and also where you could sign up for our action alerts so you can stay up to date on what the campaign is doing.
And Stacey Malkin will be linking to those websites at writersvoice.net. You've been listening to Writer's Voice, a weekly radio show airing on community radio stations across the country, streaming on the web at WMUA.org and ValleyFreeRadio.org, and podcasting at writersvoice.net. Thanks for listening. I'm producer and host, Francesca Rhiannon.